Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here again, and a very special guest is joining me for this week's pod. It's Daniel Hartman. Daniel, how are you doing?
I'm very good, John. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Yes, so feeling really good after our kind of 2-hour warm-up in the green room, Daniel. Yes, but we'll leave that to the listeners' imagination, I think.
Now we have to record at least 3 hours.
Yeah, I know. We've set the bar very, very high. Sean Carroll-esque dedication required, I think. Now, Daniel, we've been wanting to have you on the pod again for a long time. I know you've recorded with Stuart Smith before, but this is our first time talking together, so thanks for coming on to the pod. For anyone who's not familiar with your work, Daniel, you are the you're running the at Nagasapo _EN English account, right, for Vivar and Nagasaki. You're running the fan account there, and also the Nagasaki Blue and Orange blog. Have I got that right?
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I had to choose this other at name, like Nagasapo EN. I had to pick this because Nagasaki Blue and Orange was too long for a Twitter name. And yes, but on Twitter, if you search Nagasaki Blue and Orange, or on Instagram, I also have an account. And of course, also the blog, if you Google this, Nagasaki Blue and Orange, that's usually how you are going to find it. Exactly.
Perfect, yes. And there's no better source of English language Vivar and Nagasaki information on the internet. I mean, I always check your big match previews for Nagasaki every week, Daniel. So thanks for doing all the hard work on that. You're kind of kind of like what Johnny Nicol does for Gamba Osaka, you're doing for Nagasaki. So that's a great help to the pod and the wider J-League community. So please keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. That's very, very kind of you.
No problem. No problem. Now, you haven't posted a big match review of the last Nagasaki game on the blog yet, Daniel, because we're going to talk about it right now. This is to kick off our review of last weekend's J2 action, round 9 of the second tier season. We'd better start by talking about Nagasaki. They beat Machida Zelvia 1-0 at home, didn't they, with Shunya Yoneda scoring a great goal to win it in the 41st minute. I thought, just watching the highlights, Daniel, Machida seemed to settle quicker into this game. Vinicius Araujo was a constant threat inside Nagasaki's penalty area. Meanwhile, at the other end, Yoneda did well to get a header on Cristiano's cross, but it went over the crossbar. Yoneda seemed very eager to get into central positions from his position out wide on the left in this game, and it paid off for Nagasaki 4 minutes before half time, didn't it? Yoneda did really well to pirouette away from Leo Takai on the edge of the penalty area, made space for a shot, and then sent a right-footed effort into the bottom corner. So a great goal to put Nagasaki 1-0 up. At least according to the DAZN highlights, there wasn't too much to get excited about in the second half. From what I could see, Nagasaki held on for a very hard-earned and just about deserved 3 points. And for Nagasaki, they're now 3 games unbeaten. So, I wanted to ask you, Daniel, have they turned the corner now after having an indifferent start? I also saw that Asahi Uenaka was back on the bench for this game, which was good news. And I wonder if we'll see Hiroki Akino back anytime soon. I'm always scanning the lineup to see if he's back from injury yet. So, Daniel, Nagasaki 1, Machida 0. You must be pretty happy with the result and how things are going at the moment.
Yes, definitely. So I have to say, Machida is probably the team I was most afraid of before the game against them, because they scored a total of 6 goals against Nagasaki last year. So they beat us 3-0 at home, and then it was a 3-3 at Machida later in the season. And I think Machida are just the type of team, they are really good when they are playing away from home, and I think that their tactics really help them with this. So you have to be extremely careful against Machida, because they are really good when it comes to intercepting the ball. You know, they run counter-attacks, and they play a really effective high press, and this was also visible in this game, because Vifaran only had 68% of passes completed. Normally they have 78 or 80%. And yes, so as you said, the first 25-30 minutes, they belonged to Machida in this game. They were really putting Nagasaki under pressure, and Yeah, Vinicius Araujo, he had a few chances, but I have to say that also the whole game, Tomizawa didn't really have to make a big save. So Machida had their chances, but it was nothing too dangerous, I have to say. And one of the keys for Vifaren in this game was actually the way they defended on the wings. And this has become much better in the last couple of games. So now you have a good partnership formed on the right between Leo Okui and Cristiano. And on the left, you have Hijiri Kato and Shunya Yoneda. So they are working really well together. And then you have in the center of the midfield, Kayo and Masaru Kato. And they do such a good job also of helping out defensively wherever it's needed, basically. And this was really the key against Machida, because they have scored so many goals from from crosses, and Vifaren had conceded so many goals from crosses, and they really managed to prevent actually Machida from sending in any dangerous crosses. So this really helped in this game. And yeah, the goal by Yoneda, it was a beautiful finish. I think he's the only player I know who, like, his left and right foot are equally strong, and that's, he can play anywhere, basically. So he sometimes plays as a right back, and right now he plays in left midfield. And already in the previous game against Tokushima, he was involved in half of Nagasaki's chances, actually, because you never know what he's going to do. He can cut in and take a shot, or he can just stay on the wing and cross it. Yeah, so, and then when Vifaren had the lead at halftime, I think that's the best thing that can happen when you play against Machida, because then they have to take more initiative themselves. And this is exactly what happened. So in the end, Machida had almost 60% possession in the game, and that's not what they want. And you could see they had more of the ball, but in the second half, they had no chances. They had no shots on target anymore. So I think I was really pleased, even though the second half was maybe a bit boring, but I was just so happy how disciplined Vifaren played, and how well we kept Machida basically away from our own goal.
Yeah, don't worry about a boring second half when your team are winning 1-0, Daniel. I think we can all relate to that. Yeah, we want the game to be as boring as possible when we're winning, don't we? Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned, you know, down the left side. I like Hijiri Kato a lot, and the left and right sides, both flanks looking good. We didn't mention Nagasaki missing Seiya Maekuma, for example, in the defense. We didn't mention, you know, they don't seem to, they seem to kind of not be waiting for Akino to come back, right? They've got that kind of axis of Kayo and Masaru Kato, as you mentioned.
Yeah, so with Akino, he had a, I think it's tendinitis, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he had a surgery in January, and the last update I saw, he is practicing now with the ball. He started to do some running, I think, in mid-March. So I think he's still a few weeks away from actually really being able to fully play. And so I guess they are also not going to rush it, because he already missed most of last season. And then he had the surgery. And there's also still Yuya Kuwazaki, who can fit in midfield, and also Taisei Abe, the 17-year-old. So they still have a few options. It will be nice to have Akino back, but I guess they are not going to rush him. And yeah, as you said, I think when you mentioned that, yeah, now things are looking better for Vifaren, one reason why they struggled early in the season was that the manager, Hiroshi Matsuda, he struggled a bit to find the right starting 11. So the new players who came in, they didn't really fit in. So he started with Junki Takahashi at right back. And he is a good player, but he's not as aggressive as Maekuma was there. And Okui is very aggressive. So he and Cristiano, they are really playing well together. And the thing is that this aggressiveness on the right side last season with Maekuma and Wellington Ratto, that was, I really loved Wellington Ratto. He was only there for, I think, yeah, less than half a year, but he was really a brilliant player, and he Yeah, I think to lose both of these players was a bit difficult to compensate. And also the other players, like I think Koya Okuda, he was one player who I was really happy to have coming to BFarm because he played so well at Machida. But now looking back, I have to say I'm not sure if he was the right signing because we are not playing the football that Mito played. You know, so it's a we I would say we Faran are playing a bit more conservative than Mito, not so free flowing. I think that maybe suited him better, and so he has I think he is he struggled a bit early in the season, and he's not getting a lot of game time anymore now.
Well, it's good to see Nagasaki, finding their feet and getting back into the groove because it was a bit of a rocky start, wasn't it? What did you make of Machida, Daniel, in this game? Because obviously they're still third in the league table as it stands, but they only got a draw from the home game against Chiba in the previous round, and obviously they lost this game. And for all of the kind of attacking, potential and kind of good players that they have in the forward positions, they didn't really click for them in this game. Were you expecting a little bit more from them in this game, or what did you think of their performance and how they've started this season?
I think Machida are like, if I can mention my JPRIT, I put them actually into third place, I think, because maybe it's because they scored so many goals and we didn't beat them last season, but I really think they have such a great squad, and they also have a good manager, and I think actually they improved the squad, didn't they? I mean, they brought in Vinicius Araujo, and they kept most of their high performers from last season. So I really like how aggressive they play. You know, they are always looking to intercept the ball. They are playing with a high press. But the reason I think they are not going to make the top two is that they are not going to win enough games at home with their tactics. It was the same last year. I think last year they only won 7 games at home. But I think they won 13 away games. They only lost 3 times away. And I think it's going to be maybe similar this year because their tactics just fit. They have the tactics that are more suitable for away games, I would say, you know. And at home, they struggle to really take initiative. And they will, at home, they play more against basically more of the same. So when they play at home against Jeff, you know, Jeff, I think, has the same problem, don't they? They struggle at home, but they play well in away games. So when these teams meet each other, I think they are very similar. And I think that if Machida don't manage to become more comfortable when they have a lot of possession, if they don't manage to create chances from that, I think I don't see them making the top two. But I'm very sure that they should definitely finish in the top six.
I think that's really good analysis. And to be honest, we could have been describing Jeff or Machida there, couldn't we? They always seem to be waiting for the other team to attack them so they can break away. But if the other team doesn't want to attack you, then you're a little bit stuck, aren't you, with those tactics? So.
And what I like so much about Machida, I have to say, like, they have these two guys. I think it's Taiki Hirato, the captain, and Shusuke Ota. Like these two, I think they are playing sort of like offensive midfield or on the wing, but at least for Japanese like wingers, they are physically quite strong. Like when I see them play, I'm always impressed how powerful they are, but also how quick they are. And I think it was Shusuke Ota. He scored one of those goals where I think he volleyed. I don't know. It was a few weeks ago. He took a volley where you thought like he was going to tear the net apart or something.
Yeah, it's a good job that there was a goal net because otherwise, someone in the crowd might have been killed if that ball had hit them. Okay, well, yeah, I think like you, I'm sort of fairly impressed with what I've seen from Nagasaki in the last couple of games and Machida since the start of the season. So yes, I expect we'll see them you know, continuing to be up near the kind of top the top eight, or maybe you know top six as the season progresses. Daniel, I know we could talk about Nagasaki for the 3 hour pod you suggested, but I'll move you on if that's okay. We can always come back to Nagasaki if necessary. But another game that you wanted to pick out from round nine for us to highlight was a Sendai. Their home game against Yamaguchi. It finished Sendai 2, Yamaguchi 1. Fairly eventful game, this one, especially with Sendai being reduced to 10 men in just the 26 minutes. Their defender, Kim Tae-hon, picked up his second yellow card and was dismissed. By that point, though, Sendai were already 1-0 up, with ex-Nagasaki man Ryoma Kida converting a low cross from Yusuke Minagawa in the 16th minute. But then Kim took a very heavy touch while he was trying to dribble out from the back. He clattered into Yamaguchi's 40-year-old veteran midfielder Koji Yamase. You know, in a Japanese culture, it's very bad form to push a 40-year-old man over, you know, in midfield. So yeah, second yellow card for Kim, and he was off. I think Kim's first yellow was only about 5 minutes before this for a very late and unnecessary tackle in central midfield, so kind of two sort of needless bookings from him to earn a red card. Sendai then protected their lead with a couple of brilliant goal line clearances. It was Yasuhiro Hiraoka who headed off the line in the first half, and Masashi Wakasa, who was on as a kind of auxiliary centre back after Kim had been sent off, he did a similar goal line clearance at the start of the second half, which was good. But the 10 men went 2-0 up in the 51st minute. A flowing one-touch passing move was finished off with a venomous shot from another ex-Nagasaki man, Daniel Kamen Togashi. 3 goals in 2 games for him. Yamaguchi did pull a goal back with about a quarter of the game to go. Kazuhito Kishida heading in an inch-perfect cross from Hiroto Ishikawa. Ishikawa, though, nearly handed Sendai a third goal before the end with an underhit back pass that sent Kota Osane clean through. Luckily for him, goalkeeper Kentaro Seki blocked his shot and spared Ishikawa's blushes. So yeah, it finished Sendai 2, Yamaguchi 1. Sendai in fourth place at the moment, but I notice with my eagle eye they concede quite a lot of goals, 13 so far, which is the worst record defensively in the top 10. Reasonable start, you'd have to say, for Yamaguchi with 11 points from the 9 games they've played. Daniel, you wanted to talk about this game. What did you make of the match and Sendai and Yamaguchi in general?
Yeah, so I have to say I picked Sendai for this game because of all those former Bifaran players. And they also have Makoto Kakuda. He's an assistant at Sendai at the moment, and I really liked him when he played for Nagasaki. So, yeah. But I also have to say that I think Yamaguchi, they have been flying a bit under the radar. I noticed that last season already, like, they turned around their defense quite a lot. Like, for the first 4 or 5 seasons they played in J2, they conceded minimum 63 goals every season for 5 years. So between 63 and 74 goals, 5 years in a row. And then last season, they turned that around. And then also they suddenly, yeah, they had 10 points more suddenly after they changed their managers. And so this is why I have been quite impressed actually with Yamaguchi, because they have been a team that I would usually say they are going to be a candidate for the relegation battle, but I think they have really moved away from that. I think they are getting closer to being more of a maybe mid-table team. And yeah, so for this game, it was actually, I have to say that the goal, it looks a bit awkward, I have to say, the first goal of by Kida, because the pass, I think it was by, was it Minakawa? So the pass looked really slow, and it went like through the legs of one defender, and then it went in between 3 other defenders. But the thing was that I think it was Takumi Nagura, he also former Vifaran player, who he had won the ball inside Yamaguchi's half, and I think Sendai did really well in just using the momentum in that moment. So it was just difficult to defend once Yamaguchi had lost the ball inside their own half. And Yeah, it was obviously it was after they got the after they got the red card, Sendai, they were only playing for counterattacks for the rest of the game. I think in the second half, Yamaguchi, for some stages of the game, they had close to 80% of the possession. But I think Sendai, they remained, they are kind of, what I like about them is they are really courageous. Like, they will always try still to go for counterattacks if they can. There have been games when, obviously, against Machida, I think they lost 3-0 at home to Machida. They had so much possession and they were completely like outplayed by Machida because they had figured them out so well. But still, I think Sendai are at least maybe not the best team, but they are entertaining to watch and they are always going to give you something to enjoy about the game. I think they have scored 3 goals 4 times this season and they have conceded 3 goals twice. So when they are playing, they are always going to be so many goals involved. Yeah, so and yeah, that's what I like about Sendai. They are quite aggressive and the only problem is they are leaving themselves exposed so often. I think Yamaguchi in this game, they had enough chances to actually win it. As you said, they had those 2 chances where Sendai cleared the ball on the goal line. And I think that actually the problem that Yamaguchi maybe have now, why they are not going to be more than maybe a mid-table team, or maybe they are going to be in the lower mid-table, is just the quality of the players they have. I think they are well coached and they can handle position. They can also they can be dangerous with crosses. I think most of their goals they have scored with crosses and from set pieces. They can also run counterattacks, but I think overall they just don't have the quality, and that was visible in this game. Like they had so many chances, and their best, one of their best strikers, Shuhei Otsuki, he has 3 goals this season. He was missing, you know, and maybe if he would have been there, they would have actually managed to even win this game. But yeah, overall, I think they are going in a really positive direction. Actually, it's nice to see a team make such a, you know, they made the change. I think they finished last in 2020, and then they probably said, okay, now we had basically this one-off. You know, we finished last but didn't get relegated because it was this 2020 COVID season, and they managed to turn things around and. Now I think they are looking actually like I cannot I don't think they will be anywhere near the relegation zone this year.
Yeah, I think this. I don't know if any Omiya supporters, you know, are able to listen to the pod this week. They might have given up on J2 for this year. But it's pretty horrifying listening for, you know, Omiya fans, because Masahiro Shinoda, Omiya manager at the moment, as we record, you know, his, you know, his record at Yamaguchi, in terms of organizing the defense, is pretty poor, right? Based on the stats you read out, so it doesn't bode well. For Omiya. I seem to end up talking about Omiya whoever we highlight on the pod. So let's move on. Let's move on quickly. I think Yamaguchi, I agree with you about quality of player. I think they actually have a pretty decent sort of first 11, you know, which I think could be a kind of mid-table 11th, 12th, 13th place. But I think even though they have a decent sized squad, as all J-League teams seem to do, I think there is a drop-off in quality once you get past those first kind of 11, 14, 16 players. And I think maybe that might be something that hurts them later on in the season when it comes to injuries, suspensions and everything. But I think definitely, yeah, they're definitely on an upward curve, aren't they, Yamaguchi? And yeah, 11 points so far is good.
One thing I also noticed about them, I'm not sure, maybe I'm mixing it up, but maybe a couple of years ago when I listened to your podcast, I think either you or Stuart maybe mentioned a few times that Yamaguchi, they play a lot with younger players. And now actually I found out that their average age of their starting 11 is nearly 28 years. I was quite surprised by that. So of course, if they have, was it Koji Yamase who's already 40, 41? Yes. Yeah, so it's a bit like at Nagasaki when we had Tamada. So obviously, these guys are going to, yeah, they are sometimes twice as old as other starters on the team. But I think also Shuhei Otsuki, he's also in his 30s already. But at the same time, they have this other striker at Takuya Numata. He came from Kansai University. He is quite young still, and so I think maybe they have found a better mix now of younger and older players. And I think so. Yeah, like you have those two strikers who are more than 10 years probably apart from each other, but both of them have 3 goals already. And I think they are just playing a bit more maturely than they used to. They are more careful with the ball, and they are also defending a bit smarter overall. Yeah, sorry, they used to play with a really offensive formation as well. Like, I think maybe beginning of last season or 2 years ago, they still played with some like 3-4-3 or 4-3-3 with an offensive one. And now they are playing with four at the back. So it's usually something like a 4-1-2-3. Yeah, so I think that the manager, I wrote his name now, Yoshihiro Natsuka is his name. I think he has, maybe he took last season to get to know the squad more. And now he has found also his right formation. So, yeah, I'm really actually like Yamaguchi are usually a team that are flying under the radar no matter what they do. Like personally, I was also surprised that they, you know, they conceded 74 goals one season. I didn't even really notice that. Usually this is the type of statistic that is like you expect from maybe Jeff or Ehime, I think, in the last few seasons. So, yeah, but now I'm really interested now to see how it continues with Renova Yamaguchi.
It's interesting that you mentioned maturity in terms of play style and tactics, because I think I'd pick out Kensuke Sato in the center of the midfield as kind of being a good example of that. He was always a bit of a kind of hot-headed guy when he played at Yokohama FC, and was quite often on the yellow cards and red cards were pretty common. I actually saw him get sent off twice in one game. Because he got two red cards, he got sent off, and then he got another red card after the final whistle for arguing with the referee. So, but I don't see that in his game now, and I don't know whether he's calmed down or that, you know, it's slightly warmer in Yamaguchi than it is in Yokohama. Perhaps he's just enjoying, you know, the kind of, or perhaps having Koji Yamase alongside him is probably the real reason. But, they definitely are matured compared to the last couple of seasons. It'll be interesting to see how far they can go. On Sendai, I think it's good to see Keimen Togashi scoring goals and Ryoma Kido as well, because I wondered a little bit earlier on if they might be relying too much on Nakayama and Yasushi Endo. For their goals. I thought they might be a little bit of a two-man team when it came to goals, but they're sharing the goals around. Keimen Togashi, Daniel, is he a good player?
Oh, I mean, it's really, I think he is a likable player. I am not sure if he's really a good player. For a striker, I think there is a reason why Vifaren didn't keep him last year. You know, he left in the middle of the season, and I think the reason is that Hiroshi Matsuda Togashi leaves his position too often. He's not the type of striker who will be able to hold the ball all game. And, you know, he is a striker who just moves everywhere. And that makes him also a bit likable because it always looks like he's working so hard. But I remember him at Nagasaki having games where he was the only striker, but he didn't take a shot all game. So I'm always a bit torn about this question. I like him, but I don't think he's a very good player, I have to say. And I mean, as a striker, his best season so far has been 7 goals for Vifaren. So that's obviously, and that was, he played twice the minutes that the other strikers played that year, you know. So I wouldn't say he's a bad player. I guess he's overall a good football player. He's just not a very good striker, in my opinion.
I'm kind of that tallies with my view, really. I think he's a really good support striker, for somebody else, or a good player to have behind the main striker, kind of in the pocket.
Like I basically don't expect him to do this every week or every 2 weeks now. You know, he has 3 goals in 2 games now. It has happened several times in his career that he managed to do this, but I think what fits him more is when he has Nakayama next to him as well, and he can sort of help take maybe like attention away from Nakayama. So I think he, as you say, yeah, as a support striker, basically, he can fit in maybe a few games as the main guy up front, but I think overall it will be, on the long run, he will do better when he has such a guy next to him. At Nagasaki, he also had his best games when he last season, I think, and at the end of the 2020 season, he had his best game when he was playing next to Ettinger Jr.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. My final point on Keiman Togashi is he, when he celebrates scoring a goal, he has this mixture of like this explosion of obviously joy, but you can also see like relief and surprise in his body language. So I can never fully trust a striker who looks surprised when they've scored a goal, because it's kind of what they're in the team to do, isn't it? So yeah, point. I take your points, but I also think he seems like a very likable, nice guy. So yeah, I feel a bit bad about trashing him on the pod. But yeah, I think I like watching him. But yes, I never, when he's going clean through, you're never confident that the ball's going to end up in the back of the net, are you?
Yeah, and then I just wanted to say exactly that's why, like, when he goes clean through, you don't think he's going to score, but then the goal he scored now this weekend, you're surprised that he actually hit it so well. I mean, that was a great finish from him.
Yeah, I leaned forward. I was like, is that Keiman Togashi? You know, that exactly. Kind of, yeah, that's yeah. Okay. Well, we've bigged him up and crushed him in the space of 5 minutes there. So let's move on. Let's move on, Daniel.
Okay.
One more game we wanted to focus on from round nine. We're going to talk about Oita 1, Tokushima 0. So Oita finally ending Tokushima's unbeaten start to the J2 season. The all-important goal came from, Sam Robson's best mate, Shun Nagasawa, in the 76th minute. I noticed he has 3 J2 goals this season, but if you include Levan Cup games, 6, which is a pretty good start for Nagasawa. I thought the first half was pretty even here. Not too many chances for either side. Hiroto Goya looked most likely to score for Oita, but it was 0-0 at the break. Oita stepped up the pace a little bit at the start of the second half here. Goya had another chance, which he didn't take, and Arata Watanabe should have hit the target for Oita, but he fired the ball over the bar at the far post. The goal, when it did come, was from a short corner routine where Tokushima just weren't really paying attention. Eventually, Hokuto Shimoda crossed to the back post. Kohei Isa, who'd come on just a couple of minutes earlier as a sub, headed the ball back across goal. And Nagasawa's very tall, isn't he? But he didn't need to be for this one. He was able to nod the ball over the line fairly easily. So for Oita, yeah, it finished Oita 1, Tokushima 0. Oita, after 9 matches, have won 3, drawn 3, and lost 3. So I don't know what we can make of them. Tokushima, 1 win, 7 draws, 1 defeat. I'm not sure if drawing this many games is going to prove to be a strength or a weakness overall this season. But Daniel, what do you think? Oita 1, Tokushima 0.
Yeah, so I have to say I picked this game because recently I already wrote on my blog about Oita and Tokushima, and then I noticed that they are the most ball dominant teams in J2. Like, they usually have the most possession, and but they are so different when it comes to their attacking style. And like Oita, they are a bit more direct, a bit more like, what I want to say is that Tokushima, they quite lack the decisiveness. You know, so when I watched the highlights of this game and also checked the statistics on the football lab later on, I saw that basically Tokushima had 1 decent shot on target the whole game, and half of their shots came from outside the box. And the one shot they had, they only got this chance because Oita, and like, they had some dodgy passing in their own third and gave the ball away so easily. And that's quite... Tokushima, I'm quite concerned about them. I mean, they haven't scored in 4 games now. They have 0 goals in the last 4 games. This is really, really concerning, I think. And Oita, on the other side, they actually recently, they have changed their formation a few times already this season. And now they have settled with a 4-4-2. And since they have done that, I think they are a bit better when it comes to holding the ball. Now they are playing with Goya and the legend Nagasawa up front. So they do a better job of holding the ball, and they are also a bit more solid defensively. And now they also have Eduardo Neto. I think he was back in Brazil for 1 year. and now they brought him in. So I wonder if he's going to play a bigger role later on as well. So I think Oita are actually improving at the moment, and I think it was a deserved win for them. They had many chances in this game, while Tokushima are not creating too much danger at the moment. Yeah. So as you said, I also think that the goal, you could see that this was, I really liked the movement of Nagasawa. But you could see it, like you could see this goal coming, right? I think they took the short corner, and then came a pass, then came a cross, and even when the first cross in came, Nagasawa only started to move towards the 6-yard box. So it was like you could see this goal coming from a mile away, but yeah, in the end, it was an easy finish for him.
Yeah, even he couldn't miss from there, I guess. But yeah, no, he's been in good form, and I think Oita, I actually got to watch. I only got to see the first half of the previous game, which was away at Tokyo Verdy, which they ended up losing 1-0. But you mentioned Oita and Tokushima being like possession dominant teams. Well, that's the way that Tokyo Verdy like to play. And it was quite interesting the first half of that match back in round 8, where Verdy just didn't really have it all their own way in the first half, and they had to press Oita quite a lot to try and get the ball back. And you could see that wasn't really Verdy. I don't think it's something they've been asked to do too many times this year. And Oita kind of played the ball around them pretty well when they, when that press came. But yeah, in the end, they lost that game, and they won against Tokushima. So yeah, Oita, one of the teams where I'm coming round on, Daniel. I think after the first sort of 3 or 4 games, I thought they could be in for a long, hard season, actually, even after coming down from J1. But I think they're starting to be honest, a little bit like Nagasaki. I think the last 3 or 4 games, they're starting to turn things around. And I'm glad that you picked out Eduardo Neto, because I think he could be a kind of real sort of, I don't know if we could call him a secret weapon, because I think everybody knows about him in the J League, don't they? But he's kind of sneaking into the team almost, as the season's kind of already started. So I think he will add a touch of maybe quality or class that's been missing. And yeah, Tokushima, I don't know. I mean, drawing so many games, has given us, I'm not sure if we quite know yet what kind of Tokushima we're going to have this year, but they certainly don't look particularly strong. And maybe some of the things we talked about in pre-season on the pod about how they're sort of building a new squad almost from scratch, in terms of the number of players that have left and come in, it might be a hard season for them, mightn't it?
I was a bit surprised, I have to say, when I wrote my preview and I compared the teams of Nagasaki and Tokushima from the last time they played against each other. There were actually more players still at Tokushima than at Nagasaki. So they had still like 6 starters that they had in 2020. They still have now, like including who is it? The captain, Kazuki Nishiya. I think I really like him, but I think what overall Tokushima are lacking is like they have many talented players on the team and they have really skilled players, but they are just lacking this decisiveness. Like they are passing the ball back and forth so much. Like I think they have, when they played against Nagasaki, I think they had like the 4 players with the most passes were all defenders on Tokushima's side. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's, personally, I had this when Danny, or you always call him Danny Potatoes, and when I wrote about him, I actually typed potatoes several times.
That's the plan.
I think, yeah, when he came in, you heard that it was like a recommend following a recommendation from Ricardo Rodriguez, I think. And yeah, so you sort of expected something similar to continue, but and I think they are trying to play a similar style as Ricardo Rodriguez, but something is missing yet. I think maybe they are not, yeah, as I said, this decisiveness, and they are not as like the 2020 Tokushima team that I remember that got promoted. They could also be mean, kind of, they could really, I don't know, they could really attack you like physically as well. They could play hard if they had to, and I don't see this from Tokushima right now at the moment. And I think they are really lucky they have this goalkeeper. Like when Vifaren played against Tokushima, this goalkeeper, Jose Suarez, I think is his name. That was one of the best performances I've seen from a goalkeeper in J2. I know that Tokushima, they have been doing well defensively this season, but in that game it was their goalkeeper. Like, Vifaren had so many great chances and they really missed it from close range, or the keeper just saved so many of them. So yeah, I have to say I'm a bit surprised. I didn't expect Tokushima to be the team of the relegated ones from J1. I didn't expect them to be, like, position-wise in the table, to be the lowest after, we are almost one quarter into the season now. I'm a bit surprised, I have to say, because they have those players like Nishiya and also Watai, and they have Asahi Masuyama. He played for Avispa when they got promoted 2020. So I don't know. I wonder what they could do if they. I'm not saying they will change the manager anytime soon, but I am just wondering if Dani Poyatos is getting the best out of this squad. I think they have a better squad than what they are performing right now.
I think that's really good analysis, and I'm glad that you picked out Jose Suarez as the goalkeeper, who, yeah, his performance in that game against Nagasaki was absolutely sensational. But I think
Yes.
he's been good in all the games he's played, hasn't he? Another thing I like about him is on the back of his goalkeeper's uniform, his name, Jose Sanchez, is in lowercase letters, just the
Really?
just yeah just capital J and capital S, but the rest of it, or it was in the weekend anyway. And that brought back memories of Bayern Munich, sort of like the early noughties, and they had a couple of kits
Yes.
where
I
they had this
remember.
sort of lowercase and uppercase letters mixed.
I always remember how the name Matthäus looked, Lothar Matthäus, because he has this ä, the German umlaut. Exact. Yeah, Matthäus.
Yeah, for some reason,
Yeah.
the player that springs to my mind is Giovane Elber, the
Yes.
Brazilian forward. But I don't know why. That's probably something for me and my therapist to work through after.
I guess you just saw him score so many goals, so.
Yeah, well, they perhaps Tokushima could do with him at one end, now that they've got Jose Suarez at the other. But yeah, a brilliant, brilliant goalkeeping performance. And yeah, you kind of mentioned that the kind of J2, sack race. At the moment, nobody's lost their job, and I feel terrible now. Like, I'm just waiting eagerly for people to get sacked so we can talk about it. But yeah, I do think, there are sorry, excuse me, there are a couple of managers who are going to be feeling very nervous, right, going into a kind of big stretch of games over the kind of Golden Week holidays in early May. I mean, you've got Poyatos not doing it, at Tokushima, Klimovsky at Yamagata, under a little bit of pressure, and obviously Omiya and Rukyu in the bottom two, in the table as well. So yeah, lots to ponder, for quite a few teams and coaches at the moment. You'd have to say. But Daniel, at this point, let's take a quick break for refreshments, after which I'll wrap up all of the rest of the round 9 action, and then we'll get together again. We'll preview round 10 coming up this weekend. J-talk Extra Time. Hi everyone, me again with a wrap up of the rest of the round 9 action from J2 last weekend. Leaders Yokohama FC thought they'd done enough to win their away game at Jeff Chiba, but conceded a goal with the very last touch of the game to draw 1-1. It seemed like the last 5 minutes of the first half were going to tell the story of this game. Firstly, Yokohama midfielder Kohei Tezuka made a great block to deny Toshiyuki Takagi a goal for Jeff. And then up at the other end, Koki Ogawa headed in Tatsuya Hasegawa's cross to give Yokohama the lead. Ogawa scoring for the fourth game in a row, and he now has 8 goals in 9 games this season, so he's in great form. Yokohama defended their lead until the 95th minute when Jeff centre-back Iki Arai headed in to equalise after Jan Mingyu had headed down Rui Sueyoshi's cross, and that was the very last touch of the game. So it finished Jeff Chiba 1, Yokohama FC 1. Yokohama FC probably disappointed that they didn't win, but they're still 5 points clear now at the top of the table and unbeaten, 7 wins and 2 draws so far this season. Tokyo Verdy are still second, but their unbeaten start to the season was ended in spectacular fashion as they lost 3-2 at home to Kumamoto. Verdi actually took the lead on the half hour when Kohei Yamakoshi's low cross was converted by Koki Morita. Morita playing as the main striker in this game in a quite an unusual team selection. It was 1-1 before the break after an acrobatic volley from Kaito Abe went in off the post from a Van Basten-esque angle. I'm still not sure he meant it or was trying to cross the ball back into the penalty area, but nevertheless it went in and it was 1-1. 10 minutes into the second half, Kumamoto went ahead with the impressive Koki Sakamoto crossing low for an unmarked Naohiro Sugiyama to score from 6 yards. Sakamoto then missed a great chance to put the visitors 3-1 up before Verdi equalised after a mistake from a Kumamoto defender. A pair of substitutes combined as Byron Vasquez slipped in Ryoga Sato to make it 2-2. That was in the 75th minute. But 5 minutes from full time, it was the home side's turn to have a defensive brain fart, and it was 2 Kumamoto subs who won the game for the visitors. Ruki Hiroto Taniguchi, defender at centre back for Verdi, passed straight to Shun Ito, and he then set up Tatsuki Higashiyama for a fine finish. So yeah, it finished Tokyo Verdi 2, Kumamoto 3. Kumamoto's first win in 4 matches, and they have 12 points from the first 9 rounds. So I think they'll be pretty delighted with that. Niigata are 5th after a pretty routine home win over Tochigi, 2-0 at the Big Swan. The home side were in control from about the 5th minute here. That was when Ipe Shinozuka had too much space to volley in a corner kick from Yoshiaki Takagi for 1-0. Takagi was the provider again 15 minutes from full time when he clipped a ball over the Tochigi backline for Kaito Taniguchi to latch onto. Now, Taniguchi's shot had power, but it seemed to go straight through Tochigi keeper Shuhei Kawata. It wasn't a great day at the office defensively for Tochigi all round. And yeah, that's how the game finished. Niigata 2, Tochigi 0. For Kaito Taniguchi, he has 5 goals for the season. So another striker in pretty good form at the moment. It's Gunma in 6th place after they won 1-0 away at Iwate, thanks to a very late goal from Shu Hiramatsu. Iwate certainly had their chances to win this one. They were denied by the frame of the goal in the first half when a header came back off the post from Yusuke Muta's cross. And then in the second half, Gunma goalkeeper Masatoshi Kushibiki took centre stage, making his 100th J-League appearance. He made a superb double save to prevent Iwate going in front, and then another great flying save to keep out a long-range effort from Brenner. Iwate went close again when Kentaro Kai just couldn't direct his header on target, and eventually the winner came when Gunma stole possession on the halfway line, and then Koki Kazama crossed for Hiramatsu to head home from about 6 yards. So it finished at Iwate 0, Gunma 1. Iwate in 15th place, they have 11 points from their 9 games so far. Things continue to go wrong for Omiya this season as they were beaten 3-1 at home by Kofu in round 9. Omiya did take the lead in this game in the 19th minute with a towering header from Ryo Shinzato after Masaya Shibayama's corner. But it was 1-1 before the break after a flowing one-touch Kofu attack in the 36th minute. In form, Motoki Hasegawa heading in across from Yoshiki Torikai. Right at the start of the second half, there was disaster for Omiya, and Shinzato in particular. He made a complete mess of dealing with a hopeful long ball and then lost out in a challenge with Kofu forward Bruno Paraiba. The Brazilian striker, who just come on at half-time to replace Willian Lira, made no mistake after going clean through and scored his first J-League goal to make it 2-1. And Omiya then, as I seem to say quite often, self-destructed again in the 63rd minute. Rikia Motegi, in the right-back position, gave the ball away straight to Bruno Paraiba, and he took a pot shot from just outside the box that deflected off Keisuke Oyama and looped over Omiya keeper Yuta Minami for 3-1. So that's how the game finished. Omiya 1, Kofu 3. Only Kofu's second win of the season, but they're still in 19th place. Omia stay bottom and yet to win so far in 2022. To help them out, though, they announced this week that the former JFA chairman, Hiromi Hara, and of course, ex-pro player and manager, he's joined the club as a head of football operations, which I think sounds like a director of football role to me. So let's see what happens. Hopefully he can help the team to get out of the rut they're in at the moment. There was late drama and goals aplenty at the Endesoft Stadium up in Yamagata, with Yamagata eventually winning 5-1 against an Akita side who had their goalkeeper sent off. After a goalless first half, Yoshiki Fujimoto put Yamagata ahead in the 52nd minute, latching onto Kunitomo Suzuki's pass and dancing his way into the penalty area to score. But it was 1-1 just 6 minutes later when an Akita corner was flicked into the six-yard box. Unfortunate Yamagata defender Kosuke Yamazaki ended up bundling the ball over the goal line for an own goal. In the 66th minute, Yamagata restored their lead. It was Suzuki again with the assist as his low cross was touched home from just a couple of yards by Brazilian winger Thiago Alves. He was making his first start for the club and got his first J-League goal to celebrate. Now, the rest of this game was all about another Brazilian attacker, Yamagata's De La Torre, who came on to replace Thiago Alves in the 73rd minute and make his J-League debut. Just 2 minutes later, Akita defender Tatsushi Koyanagi tried to play the ball back to his goalkeeper Yoshiaki Arai, but without looking to see if there was any danger around, Koyanagi ended up passing straight to De La Torre. Arai blocked De La Torre's shot with his hand, but unfortunately the goalkeeper was outside the penalty area, so a straight red card was issued. And then with 3 minutes left, Shuto Kawai slipped in De La Torre to make it 3-1 to Yamagata. De La Torre's second goal, Yamagata's fourth, came in the first minute of stoppage time at the end of the second half, and it was a brilliant chip from the corner of the penalty area over the head of the Akita replacement goalkeeper, Yudai Tanaka. Well worth checking out online if you haven't seen it. Absolutely brilliant chipped goal from De La Torre. Right at the end, De La Torre was denied a hat-trick as goalkeeper Tanaka blocked his shot, but Koki Kido was on hand to snaffle up the rebound for 5-1, and that's how the game finished. Yamagata 5, Akita 1. A timely boost for Yamagata as they collected only their second win of the season. Akita will probably not be too despondent though, where obviously they were down to 10 men when most of the damage was done. Kanazawa stay 8th and extended their unbeaten run with a 1-1 draw at home to Mito. Mito took the lead in the 17th minute here thanks to Yuto Mori's low drive from about 20 yards. But Kanazawa level before half time, with Honoya Shoji heading home a corner from Keita Fujimura, and Shoji did his own version of the Toyocopter celebration after that goal. So I don't know if the Honocopter doesn't sound right, so we'll stick with Toyocopter for now. As the game went on, it seemed like Kanazawa were more likely to win it. Hayato Otani hit the crossbar from just a couple of yards out, and then Mito did well to produce a pair of goal line blocks within the space of a few seconds to protect their point, and it finished Kanazawa 1, Mito 1. Mito played reasonably well in this game, I think, but they're still in 20th place in the table after 9 matches with just 8 points collected so far. Finally, for round 9, there was an absolutely cracking game at the Tapic Hyagon Stadium, where it finished Ryukyu 3, Okayama 3. Both sides went close early on in this game. Mitch Duke should have put Okayama in front in the 6th minute, but his shot was cleared before it reached the goal line inside the 6-yard box. At the other end, Yuki Kusano hit the crossbar with a diving header, and then Ryukyu took the lead in superb fashion in the 23rd minute with an absolutely excellent free kick from Kazumasa Uesato, another one that's worth checking out online. Just 5 minutes later, it was 2-0. A long ball over the top caught the Okayama defence completely flat-footed, and then Koki Kiyotake was able to cross low into the penalty area for Katsuya Nakano to score. To keep things interesting, Okayama were able to pull a goal back right at the end of the first half. Haruto Shirai was played in by a nice touch from Stefan Mauk and finished very neatly. So 2-1 to Ryukyu at half-time. In the second half, Okayama went in search of an equaliser. In the 55th minute, Mitch Duke set up Takaya Kimura, but he slammed his shot off the face of the crossbar. Kimura had only been on the pitch as a sub for a couple of minutes, so maybe he wasn't quite warmed up. It was 2-2 just before the hour mark, though, with Mauk stealing in at the back post and coolly volleying a deep cross past Junto Taguchi in the Ryukyu goal. And Okayama's fight back seemed to be complete in the 71st minute as they went 3-2 up. Mitch Duke doing what he does best, you'd have to say, and heading in a corner from Yosuke Kawai. So at that point, yeah, Ryukyu 2, Okayama 3. But there was a final twist in the 90th minute as the ball broke loose on the right-hand side of Okayama's penalty area, and then Keita Tanaka crossed for Ren Ikeda to head the ball home to make it 3-3. And yeah, that's how it finished. Ryukyu stay second bottom then, but at least end a four-game losing streak with that point. Okayama are in 7th place, which sounds good, but keep in mind that's, they only have one win from their last 6 games, and that's the game that they won away at Yamagata, which has been, which is going to be replayed as we talked about last week. So that at the moment, that game is still kind of in the official records, but will be taken out at some point. So Okayama not doing as well as 7th place in the table might suggest. Okay, I think that's all from me. Round 9 thoroughly wrapped up. Please stay tuned. In a moment, you're going to hear me talking to Daniel again. We're going to preview the Round 10 fixtures in J2 coming up this weekend. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. With the Round 9 action talked about and discussed and rounded up, Daniel's back with me. We're going to talk about the Round 10 games coming up at the weekend. So, Daniel, let's start with a Saturday, April the 16th. 4 games on the slate. We have Iwate hosting Oita, Omiya against Jeff Chiba, which looks like a big game considering Omiya's predicament at the foot of the table. Kanazawa against Kofu, another interesting one. And Ryukyu, another team in trouble as it stands. They host Gunma. Any of those games look appealing to you, Daniel?
I have to say that clearly the Sunday games are more appealing than the Saturday ones. But on Saturday, I'm most interested actually in Ryukyu against Gunma. Gunma are another team that they have been doing very well. I think they have the same goal difference as Yamaguchi right now, but they even have 3 points more. So they are quite high up in the table. And the thing is that Gunma, their next 3 games are Ryukyu, Akita, and then Omiya. So I'm actually interested to see if they can continue their run, and they could really solidify their position, Yeah, so that they would not, if they can get maybe 7 points out of these 3 games, which absolutely seems doable for them at the moment, they could really be, they would be quite far away already from, from the mid-table or even the lower table. So I'm interested in seeing that. At the same time, I just really hope that UQ can get going. Gunma are not a team that is going to, they are not a team that is very strong attacking wise. So I think that maybe this could be a game where UQ's defense could finally, catch a break. I have to say I'm not too optimistic that it will happen, because when I saw Gunma play against Nagasaki, they were working so much with crosses. And they are also dangerous after set pieces. So I think that they will score against UQ. I just hope that UQ can catch a break and, get something positive into their season. At the same time, I think maybe Jeff Osborne, the Okinawa Aussie, maybe he will be even waiting. I don't know how it is at this point. Maybe he is waiting for the manager to be relieved of his duty so that someone can come in and fix what is going on.
Yeah, I think we're reaching the point where we're just going to have to put the Omiya and the Ryukyu chat in a separate pod, so that Jeff and all of our Omiya supporting listeners can decide, when they feel ready for it, they can listen to that kind of separately.
I mean, it's a bit mean maybe, but it's really at this point at Omiya and Ryukyu, I'm really just wondering. Like, it feels like, okay, if they get a win now, it's only delaying the inevitable, isn't it? So What games have you picked out for, or what game have you picked out for Saturday?
Yeah, well, I'm really boring, to be honest. But yeah, kind of just based on what you said, yeah, Almia, I think, against Jeff Cheeb. I mean, Almia have to come out and attack this game because they haven't won in the first nine matches. Obviously, you know, Hiromi Hara's just come in as the new director of football. That was announced today. I'm not sure how much impact he's going to have in the space of 5 days, other than maybe saying, you know, guys, this is the ball, it goes in here. I think Jeff, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier when we were reviewing a couple of games from the weekend, and they like to play on the counter and they're good at it, and they're going to have a lot of chances to break on Almia in this game, I think. So having said that, Jeff are a notorious sort of, you know, unpredictable side as well. You're never quite sure what you're going to get from them. So I think that has the potential to be an interesting game. And if Jeff score early, the pressure will be really on the Almia players to actually kind of stand up and, you know, really battle to get something. So I think that would be good. And Gunma, also I agree, Ryukyu Gunma, interesting one. Masatoshi Kushibiki has been in great form in goal for Gunma so far this season. I think along with Jose Suarez, he's been perhaps the most impressive keeper.
Have to say, he had a, against Nagasaki though, he made a, I think it was Cristiano's second goal. The third goal for Nagasaki, he was, yeah, that was a bit slapstick like.
Well, all J2 keepers are capable of these brain farts now and again, I suppose. Yeah, there was one funny incident in the Iwate game against Gunma from the weekend, which I don't think I mentioned in the roundup, but the very small Iwate attacker, I think it's a Shikama maybe, he took a shot after the referee had blown for an offside, and the ball hit Kushibiki in the chest, and he ended up squaring up to this Shikama, and before they were separated. But it would have been a very short fight, I think, had it gone any further. But it would have been interesting to see. I think they would have still been digging Shikama out of the pitch now if Kushibiki had got to him. So interesting stuff. Well, Daniel, you mentioned that the games coming up on Sunday looked more interesting. So let's talk about those as well. April the 17th. I think the big one from your point of view, probably Akita against Nagasaki. But we also have Mito against Tokushima, Tochigi against Kumamoto, Machida are hosting Yamagata. So that's Vinicius Araujo at Machida now, coming up against his old club, which he left fairly mysteriously, I think, during the winter. Yokohama FC, the unbeaten leaders, they host Sendai. And we also have Okayama against Niigata, and Yamaguchi hosting Tokyo Verdy. So, Daniel, is there a game or two that you're interested in on Sunday? I know at least one game you're interested in, so...
Yes, definitely. So I will obviously watch Akita against Nagasaki. I will actually also have a guest for my preview this week, Martin Spivey. He's going to join me. So it's the first time we will do a preview together. So I'm looking forward to this game, but I'm also have a bit of a strange feeling, because last season we didn't manage to beat Akita. We lost at home against them, and it was a draw, I think, up there. And I think this is going to be a difficult game. At the same time, Akita, I think last season they only won 3 games at home. They are also one of those teams that are just much more comfortable when they are away. So I hope that Nagasaki can continue their positive development. But other than that, I was actually looking for at Machida against Yamagata for several reasons. Like, I want to see how Machida are going to play now. They haven't won the last 2 games. And they had a draw, as you said, at home against Jeff. So now they are playing against Yamagata. And I'm really curious to see how they are going to attack this game. And at the same time, Yamagata, they had a really positive weekend. They beat Akita 5-1. I guess the score did not at all reflect how the game actually went, because Akita had the goalkeeper sent off, and then I think the last 3 goals of Yamagata came in the 87th minute or afterwards. But perhaps it will give them a bit of like more belief in themselves, and maybe they can also start a positive run now. And they have this new striker with the beautiful name Della Torre. He came from the same team as Wellington Ratto, actually, from Atletico Goianense. So I'm Yeah, I'm interested in this game. I think it's going to be quite it could become a quite entertaining game, and I cannot say at all how I think this game will end. So this will be very interesting. Yeah. And obviously, then I have to say, now that we talked about Tokushima just now, they are playing at Mito. So you would think if they are not going to score against Mito, then yeah, against who are they going to score, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think the Mito Tokushima game is an interesting one for a couple of reasons. I actually think Mito have played a little bit better than their results so far have suggested. I think I'm obviously a bit biased because I like the coach, Akiba Mito, and I like quite a few of the players, and just their style is, as a neutral, it's very pleasant to watch, isn't it?
Yes.
But I think, yeah, they are probably due to beat somebody. And I think Tokushima are perhaps arriving at Mito not in the best shape, so that could be an interesting game. And we mentioned perhaps some early pressure on Daniel Pyatos, you know, the Tokushima coach. That could be intensified if they lose that game. I think Akita Nagasaki is an interesting one because, you know, Akita, yeah, they did have the goalkeeper sent off and a heavy beating against Yamagata. They do sometimes have these games where they let in three or four goals, but they don't tend to do it two games in a row.
I think last season, sorry, I had to interrupt you. I checked this also for my preview. I think last season, because Akita, they never really were in danger of getting into the relegation battle, and they didn't lose two games in a row through the first 31 games of the season. I was quite impressed by that, I have to say. So yeah, as you said, maybe they in the end they in the final of the final 12 games they lost three in a row and four in a row, I think. But I think they are really like they have so much belief in themselves, I guess. Like they even if they lose by three or four goals, I don't think it really affects them so much. They are quite confident. They
Yeah,
are
they
quite
seem to bounce
confident.
back. They bounce back straight away, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah. No,
Yes.
that's true. That's true. So I think Nagasaki will have to be on their toes for that game. I think it will be a tricky, potentially tricky one. And at Machida and Yamagata, I agree with you. That's fascinating because it's two sides that they don't quite play the same way. They have very different approaches to the game, but neither of them has really shown a plan B this year. Like Machida like to play on the counter if they can, and if they can't do that, they're not sure what to do. Yamagata just attack and can't really, you know, close the door behind them or shut up shop if they need to. So I think you might find, we talked about Machida earlier and said they don't usually get the chance to play on the counter at home. In this game they might do, because Yamagata
Exactly.
will come over the halfway line and attack them. So that could be really interesting. And just one more, Yokohama FC against Sendai. Korki Ogawa is in, I'm not sure if it's the form of his life, because I know he's had really good seasons at Iwata in the past, but he is on fire at the moment. And Sendai's defence is not the strongest. I know Yokohama are going to lose a game at some point. They're not going to go unbeaten for 42 rounds. But yeah, Sendai will have to really be on their game to kind of avoid a defeat at Yokohama FC, I would suggest. So I've probably jinxed them now, and then Yokohama will lose. But yeah, I think that if Sendai can win that game, that would give them a lot of confidence as well going into, as we mentioned, really busy run of games coming up.
Yes, and I think Yokohama FC they haven't lost any points at home, right? I think they have won all of their five home games so far.
Yeah, and I think you could really see the confidence in the last home game against Ryukyu,
Exactly.
where they were 3-0 up in about 20 minutes.
And I think I'm not sure. Like I'm still a bit unsure about Sendai, like what to think about. I don't think they will make the top two, but like they are the problem for Sendai is they are conceding goals from all kinds of different situations. It's not like one weakness that you can put your finger on and say, if you can fix this, it's going to be better. But I think their style of play simply is they are risking, they are fine with the risk of losing some goals because they know that a lot of times they will also score many themselves. But I think against teams like Yokohama FC or like it happened against Machida at home, you know, they lost 3-0 at home against Machida. So I think against this type of team, they are going to figure this out rather quickly. So I have to say, I would be surprised if Sendai can win at Yokohama FC. I think already, if you are playing at Yokohama FC, already a draw is a very good result. And I forgot to mention this. I guess it was also what was a positive thing for Sendai against Yamaguchi was that they played with one man down for so many, like for most of the game, but they managed to actually score a second, and then they managed to defend their lead. I think this is quite important for them because that's not something they have done a lot this season. You know, like when they focus on defense, it just gets worse probably. So, but I guess maybe that can give them some more confidence in their defensive abilities. Then again, Yokohama FC is going to be a completely different challenge than Yamaguchi. So
yeah, I don't know. I think Yokohama FC, they've been the best team so far, but they're not invincible by any means. And I think that, you know, they are perhaps due, after going 9 games unbeaten, they're due to have a tough time and lose a game soon. So if Sendai can do that, yeah, that's going to give them a lot of confidence going into the rest of the season. But yeah, interesting game, and I'm expecting both sides will have chances to score goals. That's one thing we can say.
I guess I'm just checking. I guess then on match day 12 it will be Yokohama FC at home against Machida. That should be a really interesting one, but that's still a few weeks away. But I just saw that. I think that will be a nice game to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. They could be sort of top two, top three, going head to head, right? So yeah, but we'll see. The J League has a way of making these, you know, if you look too far into the future, the J League has a way of making us look silly, Daniel. So we better leave it there before we give the listeners cause to make fun of us later. So yeah, Daniel, thanks so much for coming on to the pod. It's been really nice to chat. It's strange because we've talked many times on Twitter, but this is the first time live. So yeah, hope you enjoyed it, and you'll come back on again soon and drop some more Nagasaki knowledge.
Yeah, thank you so much for the invitation again. I was really happy to join you, and I would definitely like to come back. So yeah, thank you again.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, thanks a lot, Daniel. Yes, and yeah, thanks as always to J Talk Pod patrons who support us. We really appreciate that support here and at the Big Pod. And yes, anyone who downloads and listens, we appreciate that as well. So thank you so much. And yeah, hope you enjoy the Round 10 football in J2 coming up this weekend. Please stay tuned to this pod though, because in a moment, after a short break, you're going to hear Magic, Mike Innes, and all the latest J3 news in J-Talk Short Corner. So please stay tuned for that. But that's all from Daniel and me. So yeah, take care and enjoy your football. Bye for now. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in round 5 of the J3 season and previewing games coming up in round 6. First, some items of J3 news since the last pod. Goalkeeper Ko Shimura has left Giravants Kitakyushu to sign for J2 strugglers Ormia Aradija on loan for the rest of the season. Shimura, who's 25, has started only one game for Kitakyushu since joining the club ahead of last season, and clearly isn't high in the pecking order among Giravants's 5 keepers. Fukushima United have signed Kento Kawano, a midfield player from Sendai University. He's a specially designated player, meaning he's fundamentally joining for next season, but will be able to play for Fukushima this year as he completes his studies. Lots of activity at Azul Claro Numazu, who've confirmed the squad numbers of the 2 players signed on loan from Saigon FC back in January, meaning midfielder Bui Gokurong, who's 20, and 21-year-old forward Gwen Banson will be available for selection by Numazu coach Masataka Imai. The same can't be said of rookie midfielder Ryota Kawata, whose contract has been cancelled by mutual agreement. Kawata hasn't made an appearance for Azul Claro since signing over the winter from Tokyo Gakugei University. Meanwhile, Numazu's postponed round 4 game at Vanrare Hachinohe has been rescheduled for Thursday the 21st of April. This gives the Azul Claro squad what promises to be a busy few days, as the preceding weekend they head down south for a league game at Miyazaki, and then on the 24th they'll be playing a prefectural qualifier for the Emperor's Cup. Speaking of which, I will in future episodes be providing coverage of J3 clubs' participation in those local qualifying tournaments, which are mostly over the weekends around the 24th of April and Sunday the 8th of May. Now on to the round 5 action, with all 9 matches taking place on Sunday the 10th of April. And I'll warn you, buckle in this week, it's quite a ride. 3 teams are now level on points at the top of the table. Fukushima United holding on to first position by the narrowest of margins after their draw at Kamatamare Sanuki. Fukushima attacking midfielder Yuta Nobe won't want to watch this one back. He missed multiple chances to break the deadlock, while Kazuki Dohana had a volley from a corner well saved by homekeeper Takeya Takahashi. And there was one truly odd moment late on when, after a bizarre Takahashi parry of a high ball, it hit the back of Sanuki captain Takaharu Nishino and rebounded onto his own crossbar. Final score, Sanuki 0, Fukushima 0. Kamatamare rarely threatened and will be glad of the point. Fukushima can mark their progress under Toshihiro Hattori by how disappointed they must feel only to have drawn this game. No more 0-0s this week. In fact, there are 25 goals to talk about from here on in. So, let's crack on. Breathing right down the necks of Fukushima are neighbours and rivals Iwaki FC, who announced themselves as serious J3 contenders with a statement win at AC Nagano Parseiro. Coming into the match, a positive COVID test for Iwaki coach Hiromasa Suguri meant his assistant Shunichi Nakajima took charge, while Parseiro boss Yuki Stauff threw keeper Issei Oichi straight into the team following his loan move from Yokohama FC. Nagano have surely had enough warning of the threat posed by Iwaki's attacking right-back Riku Saga, but just before the break, they allowed him space to send a high cross into the box, where Daigo Furukawa got the better of Keita Yoshioka to head past Oichi. 1-0 down at the interval, but the second half was the stuff of nightmares for Parseiro, who conceded again in the 49th minute when Yuto Yamashita out-hustled the defender to set up substitute Ryo Arita, who steered his shot inside the far post. 7 minutes later, it was 3-0, Kotaro Arima converting a penalty after Nagano defender Hayato Ikegaya was adjudged to have handled in the area. And the J-League newcomers confirmed their dominance with just over 20 minutes to go, centre-back Genki Egawa taking advantage of a static home defence to nod on a corner which struck the far post, ricocheted off Parseiro's Hiroshi Azuma and over the line. Final score, Nagano 0, Iwaki 4. A hard lesson to learn for Parseiro, who seemed unprepared for the challenges presented by this opponent, while a key aspect of Iwaki's strategy is hiding in plain sight. Be tough, says their slogan, and they are. On this showing, they'll not be long in J3. Also on 11 points with Fukushima and Iwaki are Kagoshima United, home winners over Fujieda My FC. Naoto Otake's side, perhaps with memories of the February friendly in which they beat My FC 4-0, took the lead in the 14th minute when Frank Romero battled his way to the goal line and squeezed the ball across for an unmarked Koki Arita to volley in his third of the season. Fujieda let slip a chance to equalise 5 minutes before half-time, Jun Suzuki's perfect through pass freeing up Tomoyuki Doi for a one-on-one with Fuma Shirasaka. Doi's shot beat the keeper but hit the post, Shota Suzuki skying the rebound over the bar. The home side sealed the win in stoppage time, a counter-attack following a Fujieda corner for which visiting keeper Kei Uchiyama went up into the area, the ball falling to Kagoshima rookie Masayoshi Endo, who raced upfield and fed Rei Yonezawa to shoot into an empty net from 25 yards. Strong hint of offside on this one, which raised an interesting question about how teams should defend counter-attacks. Final score though, Kagoshima 2, Fujieda 0. A first clean sheet for Kagoshima. Are they a great team? Maybe not. Do they keep picking up points? Yes, they do. My FC are struggling on the road at present. No goals and no points away from Fujieda Sports Park. And before moving on, just to mention Kagoshima substitute Taku Ushinohama, 11 months out injured, now back and an active part of a successful squad. Just behind the leading three are Matsumoto Yamaga, although they would have gone top if the last few minutes of their topsy-turvy home match with Tegevajaro Miyazaki had played out differently. The Yamaga fans were looking to teenage striker and J3 top scorer Ayumu Yokoyama, while for Tegevajaro, Yudai Tokunaga missed his first game since the club entered the J-League. It took Yokoyama only 2.5 minutes to find the net again, visiting left-back Kaede Shinbo under pressure and playing a loose ball picked up by Yusuke Kikui. His run was blocked by Ikuru Aoyama, but Yokoyama pounced and steered it over the line for his fifth of the season. Both teams then had chances, but much of the drama took place in the closing stages, and it was Miyazaki forward Yuki Okada, scorer last week against Kagoshima, who took centre stage. In the 85th minute, Tegevajaro drew level, Megumu Nishida's shot being well saved by Victor, only for Shinbo to centre the ball for Okada to score at the near post. And then, in injury time, he beat Victor from 12 yards after Matsumoto had failed to play the ball out from the back. A dodgy defence they may have, but Yamaga also boast the division's most potent attack, and they rescued a point in the 94th minute as Michihiro Yasuda launched a long free kick into the penalty area. Masato Tokida beat Ryota Kamino to the header, and despite the attentions of Kenji Dai, Itsuki Enomoto headed cleverly past substitute keeper Rai Shimizu. Final score, Matsumoto 2, Miyazaki 2. Exciting fare at the Alwyn Stadium, but can Yamaga develop the defensive strength required for a serious promotion push? For Tegevajaro, it's Yuki Okada who's stealing the headlines, while the bigger name, Masato Kudo, looks on. The two teams whose COVID outbreaks led to the postponement of matches in round four both returned to action on Sunday. Azul Claro Numazu at home to Giravants Kitakyushu and FC Gifu at Katare Toyama. Gifu's squad activities recommenced on Monday the 4th, and coach Toshiya Miura made 6 changes to the starting lineup, including a first pro start for Akira Yamauchi up front alongside Hirofumi Yamauchi, who so far this season has been playing right back. Toyama, meanwhile, included in their starting 11 ex-Gifu goal machine Shota Kawanishi, yet to find the net for his new club. It was Katane who, 33 minutes in, opened the scoring with perhaps the best team goal of the round. A beautiful passing move cutting open the left-hand side of the Gifu defence and clearing the way for Mateus Leiria to send a low ball across the edge of the area where Yuya Himeno controlled it and fired into the corner. Gifu pulled level in stoppage time at the end of the first half, Tetsuya Funatsu's floated cross reaching Hirofumi Yamauchi as he stole between Ryuya Ohata and Makoto Rindo to glance a delightful header over Yohei Nishibe. Within minutes of the restart, the same player had made it 2-1, heading home after Yosuke Kashiwagi's corner had evaded Mateus Leiria, and in the 59th minute, It was 3-1 as Akira Yamauchi scampered down the Gifu left and sent in a low cross that reached the far post and Ryo Kubota, who had a simple job to score. Kazushige Kirihata kept out a trademark Rindo free kick as Katane pushed to get back in the game, but it ended Toyama 1, Gifu 3. 1 point from the last four games for Nobuhiro Ishizaki's Katane side. Capable of good football, but too flaky for good results. They're looking a long way from promotion contenders. Gifu performed well following a difficult couple of weeks for the squad, although it's notable the players who made an impact here were not the big-name stars. And what about Numazu, whose training only resumed on Tuesday the 5th after the COVID cluster at their club? For the visit of in-form Kitakyushu, Masataka Imai made five changes to the team that pulled off a shock win over Gifu last time out, with Vietnamese midfielder Bui Goc Rong taking a place on the bench. In line with the theme of the week, Kitakyushu's Takeaki Hanigaya misplaced a pass coming out of defence, allowing Ryo Watanabe to advance into the area and unselfishly set up Naoki Sato for a 15-yard finish to make it 1-0 to Azul Claro in only the 8th minute. The visitors hunted for an equaliser, and 10 minutes later Kotaro Fujikawa had a dangerous cross shot blocked by first-time starter Terukazu Shinozaki. And shortly after half-time, Yuya Takazawa hit the outside of the post from a cross by Saw Fujitani. Near misses and overwhelming possession they might have had, but Giravants couldn't find the net, and they fell further behind in the 58th minute, centre-back Takaya Inui first giving the ball away and then handling in the area as he tried to defend Ryoma Kita's cross. The spot kick from Watanabe was brilliantly saved by Kenshin Yoshimaru, but Kosei Uryu was quickest to the rebound and he made it 2-0. After further Kitakyushu chances went begging, in the 90th minute, another defensive mistake set up a third for Numazu. Yasufumi Nishimura, unable to get the ball out from under his feet and allowing Tatsuya Anzai to steal possession and feed substitute Noah Kenshin Brown, who clipped the ball calmly past the advancing Yoshimaru and in. A first goal for Brown since his Sanuki days nearly 18 months ago. But the agony wasn't over for Giravants, nor the ecstasy for Azul Claro, as in the 5th minute of injury time, Naoki Sato sent a corner kick to the back post and giant defender Koki Inoue bulleted a header through a crowd of players and in. Final score, Numazu 4, Kitakyushu 0. 6 points, 6 goals scored and none conceded for Azul Claro in their last two games. An extraordinary achievement by Imai and his players. Kenichi Amano will hope this was a game Kitakyushu had to get out of their system. There was an incredible last 10 minutes of action at the Ninjaneer Stadium, where Ehime FC took on another team relegated from J2, SC Sagamihana. With the match heading for 0-0, in the 81st minute, Sagamihana's Takumu Fujinuma laid the ball off for Jungo Fujimoto, who curled an unstoppable 20-yard shot past Kenta Tokushige against the inside of the post and into the net. A goal worthy of winning any game, but Fujimoto's team held the lead for barely 2 minutes. For when Asahi Yara sent over an outswinging corner, it was met by Daisei Suzuki with a thumping header for the equaliser and his first ever pro goal. Enter 17-year-old Ehime substitute Toki Yukutomo, who in the Mighty Mikan's last home game came off the bench to score a stunner on his debut. And here, Yukutomo replicated the trick in the 89th minute, latching on to Reiya Morishita's through ball and with his first touch, sweeping a brilliant finish inside Kentaro Kakkoi's far post. Final score, Ehime 2, Sagamihara 1, bringing to an end a run of 18 home games without a win for Ehime, who just might have found themselves a new star, while Sagamihara this season under Takuya Takagi unexpectedly fragile. Gainare Tottori moved away from the foot of the table with their first win of the season as they beat YSCC Yokohama in a home game staged at the Chubu Yajin Stadium in Yonago. Tottori went in front midway through the first half, Yuya Taguchi catching YSCC defender Kyosuke Hashimoto in possession and setting up an overlap by Yushi Nagashima, whose left foot cross was well finished by Yu Okubo. Moments later, Hashimoto blundered again, passing straight to the alert Taiki Anai, whose quick pass into the area enabled Okubo to set up Taguchi for his first of the season. Then, in the 67th minute, poor Hashimoto guaranteed no one would sit next to him on the long trip back to Yokohama, dithering inexplicably in his own penalty area and allowing Nagashima to take the ball and beat Shunken Tani from 6 yards. Final score, Tottori 3, YSCC 0. Welcome points for Gainare, but did YSCC make it easy for them? A long season awaits Kenji Nakara's team. Finally, two squads still finding their feet in terms of player selection met at FC Imabari, where Vanrare Hachinohe were the visitors. There were four changes to the Imabari team. Kazuaki Hashikawa still experimenting to find his best starting 11. New striker Ralph Saintians nowhere to be seen in the matchday squad. Masahiro Kuzuno included ex-Imabari pair Jun Anima and Koichi Miyao in the Hachinohe lineup. The home side had the better chances, in particular Marcus Indio. Vanrare still struggling to create much, and with Yusei Kayanuma unconvincing as their main striker. The only player on the pitch who's offered a goal-scoring threat this season is Imabari's Kazaki Nakagawa, so it wasn't a surprise when he put his side in front just before the hour, getting on the end of Takatora Kondo's left-wing cross and scrambling it over the line with the Hachinohe defence nowhere to be seen. Final score, Imabari 1, Hachinohe 0. A comfortable home win, but Imabari 2022 are still very much a work in progress. Vanrare, after their close-season transfer activity, are so far one of the disappointments of the year. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 5, noting that Gifu, Tottori, Hachinohe and Numazu still have a game in hand as a result of their round 4 postponements. The top 4 are Fukushima, Iwaki and Kagoshima, all with 11 points. Then Matsumoto, one behind, with 10. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are Toyama, slipping down to 15th with 4 points. Then it's Tottori, also with 4, Hachinohe, 3, and at the bottom with 1, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the fixtures in round 6, with 2 games on Saturday the 16th of April. Kagoshima have an early opportunity to stake a claim for top spot with a home match against Tottori. And it's a Yuki Stauff derby as he takes his bruised and bloodied Nagano to former club YSCC. The other 7 games are on Sunday the 17th. Leaders Fukushima are at home to Sagamihana. Hot on Fukushima's heels, Iwaki play host to Imabari. Another big game involving Gifu, where the visitors are Matsumoto. Can Fujieda get back to winning ways at home to surprise strugglers Toyama? Now both in mid-table, another meeting of ex-J2 teams as Kitakyushu take on Ehime. Miyazaki are at home to suddenly inform Numazu. And there's a welcome home game for Hachinohe against Sanuki. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.